Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to create gummies, baked goods, and flower for whatever type of buzz you'd want. I'm talking about Mood.com. They have an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. This isn't some rinky-dink discount of 5 or 10%. This is 20% off your first order. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. My favorite are the Sleepy Time Advanced gummies. That's right, those are for sleepy time. You know when you just can't fall asleep? Take these and they'll put you right in the mood. Beyond gummies, Mood also has a selection of flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and beverages. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much everywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code SPECIALISTS when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Try it today at mood.com.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Maybe. The cinema specialists are back, and it has been a very long time since you've seen us at all, but especially since we've sat down and talked about Marvel. It has been, I believe, since February that we've dived into Marvel. I needed the break. I'm not going to lie. I really did. I'm very happy I got the break. I'll probably be accepting a second break immediately after we get to Deadpool and Wolverine. But we always said that as soon as Deadpool and Wolverine came up, we would start going back through phase five because we haven't done phase five yet. We would get into phase five and we would talk about those three movies in the buildup to Deadpool and Wolverine. And of course, bring back watching a new movie, which, John, you just went and saw A Quiet Place Day One. I haven't seen your review for it yet. It's not up, so I don't know what to expect from you, so this will be fun. But I know that we both don't like Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania. So if that's shocking to you, if you're listening to this podcast and you're like, wow, that doesn't make sense. I feel like Phil and John would love this movie. Yeah, we don't. And I guess This is the most universally hated movie, Marvel movie, that isn't The Incredible Hulk. And I think that that is honestly a little shocking.
I think there's an argument that Captain Marvel also kind of falls in that category a little. But I think what it comes down to is this is phase five. This was supposed to be the new big thing, right? This is the buildup to everything. And I think it really let a lot of people down. That, and the fact that the previous two Ant-Man movies had actually been quite good.
Mm-hmm.
You and I both have them rather high up in our MCU rankings. And this is a letdown. And I think there are a lot of reasons that lead into it. So I'm really interested to see what your take is seeing it the first time. Because this is the third time I've watched this movie for some reason.
Yeah, this is the first time I've watched this movie. And it'll be the only time I ever watch this this movie, for sure. I hated this. I know that's going to be shocking. But like the problem is, honestly, I will say, the Ant-Man movies, what I have found with the first two, I actually had them both ranked higher on my list than I think most people would have Ant-Man movies ranked. I have the first Ant-Man at number 11, and I have Ant-Man and the Wasp actually at number 9. And it's funny because when I go and look at Ant-Man and the Wasp, it has a 2.9 rating on Letterboxd, and I gave it 3 stars, which very rarely do I give a Marvel movie more stars than what the Letterboxd average is. So yeah, it worked for me. It's fine. They're just fun. And the problem with this movie is it's really not fun. It's just kind of nonsense. And I know Steve had put up his review of it was that it kind of felt like an 80s sci-fi epic, you know, epic air quotes. But like that is kind of what it feels like. It feels like an 80s sci-fi movie. It's just got all the tropes. It's kind of nonsense. MST3K could do a riff of this movie and I wouldn't be shocked. And that's insane and alarming when you consider the amount of budget that this movie had. So yeah, it was just disappointing. Like that's really all it comes down to, is it just was disappointing.
I think one of the weirdest things with the Ant-Man trilogy that we have now is that they don't really feed into one another all that well. Ant-Man and the Wasp kind of made sense coming off of Ant-Man, but you had Civil War in the middle of it that kind of broke it up. And in this case, we go from Ant-Man and the Wasp into Quantumania after the events of Endgame. And again, that breaks it up. And that is honestly a lot of Steve's character in this movie. It's just like, yeah, I saved the world.
Yeah.
I saved the world and I'm a dad. Did you guys know I'm a dad? That is what Scott's character is this entire movie. And it's so unfortunate because previously we still got the I'm a dad aspect of Scott Lang, but we had more character, we had more interaction with him, and when we understood a lot more about him. And then we also look at these three movies, they're three very different genres, and it seems like Marvel just can't decide what genre they want Ant-Man to be, and because of that, it's kind of just this throwaway. Despite the fact that I do think Ant-Man is one of the more popular MCU characters.
Well, at this point, I feel like it. I feel like it's just different. And I think like when you look at this movie, my biggest problem with this movie is that there's really no There's no rhyme or reason to what I'm watching. I understand it's supposed to build up Kang, and I understand Kong, whatever you're supposed to call him. Kang. I don't care.
Yeah.
Kang, I understand it's supposed to build that up, but none of this takes place in the real world. And that is a detriment to the movie because the stakes don't feel like, not that the stakes in these Marvel movies ever really feel like much, although we're coming off of me actually really enjoying Black Panther Wakanda Forever. I can't let people forget that I actually really did enjoy Black Panther Wakanda Forever. So we are coming off of me enjoying that movie a lot, and the stakes felt real in that one, especially since Black Panther's not even in it. And so when I watch this movie, it's not that I'm sitting here expecting, okay, life or death, what's going to happen? But when this is taking place in the quantum realm, which we've seen very little of, and now I'm watching this and it's this purple, brown, blue, red mess that's just happening behind characters where characters aren't even interacting with it, and it's whatever. I mean, this movie, I know it cost them a ridiculous amount of money. It's like, no need. You could have just done anything else. And when I watch it, it is I don't understand what I'm supposed to grasp from it. You can sit here and you can tell me there are stakes because if this happens or this happens, then everybody on Earth will die. But in the movie that I'm currently watching, there are no stakes. It doesn't feel like there's anything to actually lose or gain that's happening in this movie. And that is frustrating. You know, the whole thing taking place in the quantum realm, which doesn't look good, which is a bunch of characters we don't see, don't care about, don't know about. They all just kind of look funny. Isn't that silly? Tee-hee-hee. It's just a mess. Like, it really is just a mess. And it totally wastes. I mean, look, I understand that Jonathan Majors, like, had all his stuff come out. So, like, I'm a big proponent of talk about the acting. Don't talk about the personal life. When it comes to how I can rank somebody, I mean, American Beauty is still my number two movie. Although the Kevin Spacey stuff has gotten weird over time. I don't know how much people have followed that. Quick aside. It's gotten very strange. You should catch up on it if you haven't in a while. But Jonathan Majors is great in this movie. He's the best part of this movie by far. And honestly, I understand why they wanted to make him the franchise. I understand why they were building him up and setting it up for so much from this guy, because he is solid. And that's been Jonathan Majors throughout his career. He's a solid actor. Now they lose him. And obviously they can't control that. They can't control what he did in his personal life that make them lose him. But now I really sit here and say, why the hell did I watch this movie? And they just waste him in general. Like, they just waste what Jonathan Majors had.
Yeah, and that was one of the biggest things coming into this new post-Infinity Saga MCU that we have here. And it is this promise of this very threatening character, Kang the Conqueror, very well-known villain throughout Marvel Comics history and everything, has a lot of connections to a lot of these IPs that we haven't been able to explore in the MCU because they've been owned by all of these different production companies, and the merger of Disney and Fox really opened up the books and what they were allowed to do. So they had access to characters like Kang, which with it brings a promise of the Fantastic Four eventually and things like that. It makes sense to be doing that and building it. And he's also the type of multi-dimensional time traveling guy that you can have in where the direction you're wanting to go with the MCU moving forward, especially because, Phil, I don't know if you actually know this, but when we were getting into phase 5 and we got the plan for phase 5 and phase 6, Marvel outlined that we were kind of diverging into three different realms of the MCU. We had the mystical side of the MCU, we had the space side of the MCU, and we had the quantum side of the MCU. So this was supposed to set up this quantum side. It introduces this new world that they can explore that isn't the multiverse, but is like loosely connected to the multiverse. The problem with it, this feels like a Guardians of the Galaxy movie without the characters people enjoy, not directed by the director who makes those movies enjoyable.
Yeah, I agree with that. I do agree with that. Because like, when other than Ant-Man, the rest of the characters, no matter how much effort the actors put in, aren't that interesting. Like, no. Hank Pym is not that interesting. Janet is not interesting. The Wasp is okay, but on her own, Evangeline Lilly, like, I love Evangeline Lilly. Lost is back on Netflix just in time for me when I canceled Netflix. Lost, love that. But they can't carry it on their own. And then Catherine Newton, like, I like Catherine Newton just fine. Her character stinks, and like, she's not that great in this movie either, because there's nothing there. And so you're right. It is kind of like, here's the Guardians of the Galaxy. They've all broken off. So we're not even spending all that much time with Ant-Man. And then to start it off, and look, I get it. They're Marvel movies. They all have convoluted plots. This probably feels like the most convoluted to me out of like all of the major ones. Because the fact that this just starts off with him doing that reading and that's it. And then he goes home and it's like, oh, wow, we've been working on something. She's so great. This is awesome. And then it's like, no, close it now. Close it now. And then they just get sucked in immediately after. It's like, okay, that seems a little rushed. That seems a little lazy. That seems a little silly. And that really hit me pretty hard. So I agree with you. It's like, you have a bad setup. The characters can't carry their storylines on their own. And then you just have this mess of a CGI movie where it's hard to ground yourself in anything because it's all taking place in the land of drink ooze and everybody speaks English.
Yeah. And I mean, and it's not even really played into is the problem. Like, we obviously have that issue with science fiction in general, whereas like, why does everyone speak the same language? Why can everyone communicate with each other? And what we have, Douglas Adams probably comes up with the most elegant solution with it, with the Babel Fish in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And that's kind of what they're going for here, but it doesn't have the humor element that the Babel Fish has, which makes that such a compelling way of translating everything. This instead is like, here's this, like, you know, we're just shoving it under the carpet. Here we go. You don't have to question it because here's our answer for why it works. We gave a reason, even if it doesn't make sense, especially when it seems like the ooze comes from this singular dude
who doesn't have holes.
So where does the ooze come from? It makes no sense. I don't get it. Just like excretes it off of his body. There has to be holes for excretion, guys. That's just how science works. But the issue is, and we've talked about this a lot with the MCU movies. The MCU movies that you and I both enjoy more are so focused on character and focused on these people learning about themselves, learning about their interactions with others, and learning to be better themselves. There is this perfect opportunity in this movie to have Scott Lang just be like, I saved the world. What am I doing now?
Yeah.
That's the story they should have gone with, right? Like this feeling of insignificance for the man who can shrink.
Yeah.
Like, it's the perfect plot that they could have gone with. They kind of set it up where I even wrote in my notes, Scott Lang is so pathetic in the beginning of this movie with how self-obsessed he is with his story that it like seems very clear he understands he is completely insignificant to everything and that he just like happens to have saved the world because he happened to be stuck in the quantum realm. But then when we build into it, like, there are all these rules about the quantum realm that have kind of been previously established that are thrown out in this movie. There's no consistency with the way Marvel has decided to approach this realm. And they spend so much time trying to set the rules of this new universe that they forego any character development. And instead of focusing on either Scott's insignificance or how about just like Janet's trauma for clearly assisting this like genocidal maniac, and like they give us these little tidbits of it and just don't delve into anything to make these characters exciting. And this is a 2.5 hour movie.
Well, it's only 2 hours and 6 minutes. Let's not get
it. It feels like a 2.5 hour
movie. Yeah, it does feel like a 2.5 hour movie, but let's not get too out of control. It's only 2 hours and 6 minutes. And yeah, I think that you said it earlier where it felt like this movie jumped ahead too much because you had too many movies in between. And, you know, that's where the size and the weight and the scale of Marvel falls in upon itself, is that there's too much going on and too many stories and they just can't connect at all. And they start to realize after they introduce something that maybe it doesn't work. So now they need to abandon it because now they have this is the 31st movie in the series that needs to have the same rules as everything else. But I do agree with you. They tried to set that up of like, Scott has nothing going for him. He saved the world. He wrote a book. They're making fun of him because that's all he talks about. But then by getting out of the human world, we don't get to actually see how the human world wants to interact with this guy who saved the world and is writing a book about it. And you know what? Maybe this is a movie that could have used another Avenger coming in to be like, are you seriously trying to profit off of the Avengers? Like, maybe that could have been useful in a movie like this. And instead they throw us down there with these creature looking things that I have no idea who or what they are. And I'm never going to care. And that's it. And now you got Rachel in here saying nothing Marvel loves more than throwing out its own rules. I point back once again to the Shield issue. She loves to bring that one up, which is that, what is it? They start calling it Shield, but then it's not called Shield or whatever it is. It's established early on. But I also think that that's important to bring up in this movie, because you want to talk about one of the biggest plot holes ever. Kang has seen everything a million times and he's not even linear and he has no time and everything is out of time and he can see this, that, blah, blah, blah. But he can't see like that he's going to lose this battle. It's so, just like you have to calm yourself down a little bit when you're establishing all this stuff. Cause when you make him the end all be all, well, then when he ends, it's a little silly.
So one of the issues with Kang as a character is, other than the fact that he's somehow beaten by the dude who can shrink and grow in this movie. Other than that, and I guess some giant ants too, but other than that, this is our first introduction to Kang, but it's not our first introduction to this idea of variance in the MCU, because this is following Loki. And this kind of runs into the issue we see in Phase 5, in which, luckily, like, next movie, it's not going to matter. But for subsequent movies, it does matter, right? Because Guardians of the Galaxy 3 is kind of its own thing. The Marvels, pretty much a direct sequel to one of these MCU TV shows. And they've set up Kang and introduced this idea of these, like, variants who are out there and, you know, sit at the end of time and control everything. And I mean, spoiler alert, Loki, like, or Loki and Sylvie, who's a Loki variant. It's really confusing, Phil. It's really going to be hard to really fill you in on everything that happened in there.
I don't need to be filled in. I'll just watch the movie and say I didn't like this one or I did like this one.
Second, Loki kills this dude and then all of a sudden, like, makes it so things are going crazy and it's leading into Deadpool and Wolverine eventually. But because of that, like, we have this setup in this show of how terrifying this character is. We've seen this character before. We know what he can do. I mean, we're getting another killer performance from Jonathan Majors in it. And then we see him here. But the character of Kang's never really set up in this movie.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we are told things. We have a lot of exposition being like, oh, yeah, I saw that he's, like, you know, killed a bunch of people. And he has these lines of, oh, you're an Avenger? Have I killed you before? That's a badass line. But there's nothing setting it up, right? And, like,
well, and that's again where I go to, shouldn't he know this? And also, okay, have I killed you before? I get, like, at the end, they show all the different versions of Kang. But again, like, shouldn't he know what he's walking into since time is not linear for him?
Well, but there is an explanation in the movie that the quantum realm is outside of time and space, so it doesn't count. Right? Like, and that's, it's just this instance of, like, lazy writing we get in this movie, where it's like, oh yeah, I guess we kind of wrote ourselves into a hole, but we're going to put this throwaway line here to excuse it. And just be like, yeah, well, you know, rules, who needs them?
Yeah, and that's
rules when we get to our second movie today.
Yeah, it does. You really, really, really feel it in this one. And I mean, obviously, like, I nitpick these movies pretty good. Like, I'm not going to lie. But this one, like, it's not even nitpicking. You're right in terms of they don't establish him well. They don't. It's a lot of just talking about who Kang is or what Kang could be. So you know he's intimidating. Again, Jonathan Majors is giving a good performance. But what does Kang actually do in this movie that is harrowing in any way, shape, or form?
He has some intimidating speeches, but, like, we don't even get an explanation as to how he took control of the quantum realm. Mm-hmm. And he, like, built this empire there. Instead, we are treated to this, like, it feels like it's because he's this imposing character with all this, like, future technologies and stuff, which is hinted at again, but never really fully said. But at the same time, like, we see the way he interacts with Janet. So is he taking over by being this charismatic bad guy? Like, what direction are we taking this character in? And it feels like he should have been the charismatic villain. He should have been the villain who is swarmy and like, just talks through things and makes people do what he wants. And then when they don't, he uses his power to force them to do what he wants. But instead, they decide not to develop the character into a way. And rather than him convincing Scott to help him, Scott should have been, like, tricked into helping him get his quantum drive or whatever they call it in this movie, right? Like, Scott should have been like, I'm an Avenger, I can help you. Rather than it being like, I have your daughter, I'm going to kill her if you don't help me.
Yeah.
It's just there's this lack of motivation that makes sense for the character as it's being presented.
Yeah. I also feel so we have that going on. Why does he want to keep the daughter? Like, what is his purpose for keeping Cassie?
There's no real explanation. In fact, it's probably his worst decision in the entire movie because it's the only reason Scott comes after him.
If he doesn't keep Cassie, then Scott just goes on.
Yeah.
Seems silly.
Yep. It doesn't really make sense. But you know what? They didn't build up Janet's character to make her want to redeem herself by taking out Kang. So they needed an excuse to have Scott go back there. That's just what it comes out. Again, it just came down to lazy writing with this one. And it's unfortunate to say that because these are obviously like this is a point where Marvel was starting to struggle. And this is a point where it very much became clear they were running out of ideas. People weren't flocking to the theaters to see their movies anymore. But these are, like you said, like hundreds of millions of dollars go into this movie.
$326 million budget.
And like, yeah, sure, a lot of that's taken up by a CGI budget that doesn't need to be there. Like, just make real sets. But
well, and what's insane though, and I just have to say this, that's without P&A. So there's no advertising on that. And this movie only made $476 million worldwide, only made $214 million in the US.
Mm-hmm.
It barely broke even when you count in P&A and stuff. Barely broke even.
Yeah. And because of that, like, I think this is part of the reason why, and of course, like obviously with like the strikes that happened last year and everything, why Marvel is kind of like everything that happened with Jonathan Majors, why Marvel is rethinking everything they're doing moving forward. But it just feels like pay your writers. I mean, this is why there was a writer strike last year. Pay your writers because this feels like it was written by AI.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like it was filmed in AI. So yeah. Can I just be, you know, before we move off, there's one person that must be mentioned, and that is MODOK.
Some of the worst visual effects of all time.
Of all time. I just turned that into my poster for this movie on Letterboxd, just so you all have to look at it every time you go to, like, my profile or something. Dude, like, why? That's my biggest, like, why is this a character? And I guess it was funny when the whole message of the movie is just don't be a dick. And he's like, but look at me. I am a dick as he's laying there like smothered and stuff. Like that was a funny moment where it's just like Corey Stoll's line delivery of that was hilarious. This though, like it's essentially they made Crew from Jack and Daxter from Jack 2 and Jack 3. They made Crew and they turned him into a Marvel character. And that's all it is. And you know, like, this was kind of funny when Jack 2 came out and we hadn't seen it before, but now we've seen this and it's like, and maybe some people hadn't seen it and they thought it was really funny, but I don't know. It's just a floating head and it's just weird. And it's kind of like, why?
Well, MODOK is a pretty popular villain in the MCU, like in Marvel comics and stuff.
That's my fault.
Is connected with AIM, who you'll remember, maybe not remember, Guy Pearce's character from Iron Man 3. Created AIM, that was like his organization, and MODOK is like closely related to that. The weird thing about MODOK being included in this, there was actually a FX series, I want to say either the year before or 2 years before this movie came out, that was a MODOK like claymation, like kind of like Robot Chicken-esque show with Patton Oswalt starring in this character, and it is hilarious. Honestly, one of the most underrated Marvel properties in recent years. And it was canceled because nobody watched it. And it's just weird that we kind of have like the same type of character going on here, but it's portrayed in like such a pathetic way. When it was so much better when MODOK is supposed to be this imposing character who is, you know, really full of himself and thinks of himself as like this higher being, despite the fact that he's just a stupid floating head.
Yeah. I mean, it is, it's fine. It's probably the most fine part of the movie. It is just one of those things where as I'm watching it, I'm like, this would be better if it didn't feel like, because the rest of the movie just doesn't work for me. This feels like a bad joke that isn't really landing as a joke because the rest of the movie doesn't look much better or less silly than this.
and that's the hard thing to parse in this movie. I've seen this movie 3 times. On my initial watch, I gave it 2.5 stars, and every subsequent watch, I've knocked it down 0.5 star. And at this point, it's clinging on to 1.5 stars simply because of Jonathan Majors' performance.
Yeah. I put it as I gave it 1.5 stars, and it's my 25th ranked Marvel movie out of 31. So I still have plenty behind it, but
it's my 24th ranked, so I'm in the same ballpark.
Out of 31, or have you ranked all?
Out of 31.
Okay, so you're going at the same speed here. Let's talk about A Quiet Place. First, I guess I'll give everybody the update on what we're doing for the rest of the month now so that everybody can kind of play along with us. So next week, we will be doing Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 and Long Legs, the Nicolas Cage, Micah Monroe movie that's coming out. Can't wait for that one. Then we're going to be doing The Marvels and Twisters. And then we will be doing Deadpool and Deadpool 2 to go along with Deadpool and Wolverine, which is set to come out on, what, the 26th? So those are our next 3 weeks. After that, I don't know what we're doing. And also, if you're interested in becoming a patron, or if you already are a patron, our movies are Do the Right Thing, Phantom of the Paradise, Twister, and then The Iron Giant. That's the rest of July. And our first movie in August is going to be Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou. So we have our stuff set. We just don't know what exactly August is going to look like. There's probably going to be a week or two break at least at the beginning of August. All right, let's talk about A Quiet Place Day One. I want to just first say I went into this movie with no idea. I didn't look at any reviews. I didn't look at it on Letterboxd. I didn't look at it on Rotten Tomatoes. I didn't look at it on IMDb. I didn't read a single review. I didn't talk to anybody about it. I don't remember the last time I went into a movie that blind. Because for me, sometimes I'll go into a movie, I'll have an expectation, and then it won't hit that. And I felt like with a prequel to the two Quiet Place movies, how good could this movie really be? So my expectations were kind of low. I figured the reviews were going to have it at like a 60%, 55, whatever. Mm-hmm. After watching the movie, I realized what a bunch of shills the reviewers are, critics are nowadays, just hoping because they all write for publications that want to get interviews and want to do all that stuff. I know I say this a lot on this podcast, but I really need to stress it. The critics nowadays are not real critics. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. They're not real critics. Every single one of those critics writes for a publication with the hope that one day they will get to interview somebody who's affiliated with said movie or get to go interview a big blockbuster or something like that. I get it. And you know what? Maybe it's something where we should be a little bit nicer because you never know. Maybe Lupita Nyong'o is going to show up one day and say, I really want to go on the Cinema Specialist podcast. Obviously, that's not going to happen because she's really talented. But I sit there and I watched this movie, and the first hour I was like, okay, this is fine. Like, whatever. Mm-hmm. This is whatever. I don't know where it's going. It doesn't feel like a necessary movie, that's for sure. But okay, here we go. Then the second hour happened. And the second hour, I couldn't close my eyes hard enough to not watch the atrocity that was happening. And what makes me laugh now, though, is I go home. I give this movie 1.5 stars because I thought the last half was absolutely abysmal. And then I start to read reviews for it. And I see that it has an 87% on Rotten Tomatoes. And I see that most people who are reviewing this movie are praising Lupita Nyong'o, which is well worth it. Yep. She's always great. It's not her fault. Mm-hmm. But they're praising her and Joseph Quinn together. And I sit there and I say, Joseph Quinn, who you're all going to sit here, people are just praising Joseph Quinn. Wow, he's so good in this, blah, blah, blah. And it's so heartfelt, whatever. Lupita Nyong'o and Joseph Quinn do nothing for the final hour of this movie. And if you are honestly trying to tell me that this was well done, and maybe there's somebody out there who can explain this to me and I'm just a dumbass. And I'll admit it. I'm a dumbass sometimes. I don't feel like I'm a dumbass on this. But if you can explain to me why somebody would like that unless they felt that they had a chance to interview Joseph Quinn at some point in the future because he is going to be in Gladiator 2 and he is going to be in the Fantastic Four, or Lupita Nyong'o just because she's an Academy Award winner who's incredible. If you can give me a reason other than those two things as to why you enjoyed the last hour of this movie, and you can convince me it's a legitimate reason, I'll give you $5. Okay? I'll give you $5. I'll start taking John's money. John's money.
Knew that was coming.
For doing Patreon and stuff. I'm going to start taking it from him and give it out. But I'll give you $5 because you cannot convince me that you actually sat there for the last hour of this movie and said, hell yeah, this is what A Quiet Place is now, baby. Woo-hoo. It has gone from horror movie to we're doing a little fake dance thing because humanity is humanity. Give me a break. The first A Quiet Place is one of the best horror movies of the last decade. And this is what it's turned into. My goodness. Give me every Halloween sequel, every Friday the 13th sequel, every A Nightmare on Elm Street sequel. This is nonsense. And people are trying to act like it's art, and it's not. Anyway, John, did you like it?
Oh, well, great thing. Because I watched it so recently, and I intentionally didn't write my review so that you had no idea how I felt about this movie. I also went into this movie incredibly blind. I hadn't looked at any of the reviews. The only review I had seen was your 1.5-star review. And I was like, oh, here we go again. Like, am I just going into this movie and, like, I'm going to have to tell Phil why he's wrong? I'm not. I don't think you're harsh enough on this film. This film was so bad. And you put it perfectly in your review on Letterboxd. This movie's boring.
Yeah.
Nothing happens. And I'm sitting there watching this movie. You know, it's quiet. Everyone's actually quiet in the movie theater. And I get out and I'm like, man, there is no tension in that movie at all. There is never, it doesn't feel like there are any stakes at all. It doesn't feel like anything makes sense. Again, I'm going to dive into the rules of the universe because, oh, I have problems with the rules in this movie. I walk out. I mean, this movie's been out for 2 weeks now. There were like 8 other people in the theater with me. And I'm walking out and there's this couple behind me and one of them saying, oh, it was just so tense the entire way through. And I'm like, when was there tension in this movie? There is one moment where I jumped and it's because I'm still a sucker for a sting. It's when Joseph Quinn pops out of the water.
When he pops out of the water. Yeah.
That's only the only time I jumped in the entire movie.
And then I said, who the hell's this guy?
That was my response too.
I literally felt like I was in Everybody Wants Someone. The teacher walks in and the guy looks up and goes, who the hell's this guy?
Yeah.
That's how I felt. That's how I felt. I guess he's important, but he doesn't feel important to me.
And that's really where this movie fails. This movie fails to develop any character. And especially when we're looking at the other two Quiet Places, the first one specifically, because the first one is by far far superior in this franchise. That movie establishes everything immediately. Mm-hmm. You think about the opening shot of that movie, right? And it's the convenience. They're in the store. They're looting the store. And all of the shelves have all the like crunchy foods on them still. Everything else is gone, but all the bags of chips are still on the shelves. There's sand on the road leading all the way. They're walking barefoot. Establishment of rules. There's an understanding here as to what is happening in this world immediately. This didn't feel like a prequel. This felt like a movie set in a universe with established rules because somehow on the first day, everyone knows they have to be quiet. And that's just not like that moment. The moment where...
In the church.
Not in the church. The moment at the very beginning of this movie, as soon as everything happens, and Lupita Nyong'o is woken up and what's-his-face, like, Jimin Hounsou puts his
hand Jimin Hounsou. Isn't that Hounsou in the church, though?
I thought it was in like a store or something, or like it was the theater, right? Right?
That's exactly what I was talking about. Like he literally puts his hand over his mouth and says shit, and everybody's quiet. And it's like, dude, if you have a disaster take place around a massive group of humans, you can tell them all to shut up. They're not going to because they're panicked.
Yeah, it was just like all of my suspension of disbelief is gone in that instance. As soon as they walk into this theater and there are like 100 or like a couple hundred people just being quiet, that's not a thing. Like there's no way this is what's happening. And yes, there's this like disconnect on like how long Lupita Nyong'o's Sam is like out, right? But it's still day one. Like the movie's called Day One.
Most of this movie's on day two and day three.
That's true. But the biggest thing with this movie is it doesn't give us what this prequel should have given us, where, yes, it gives us the alien invasion of it all. Even like watching trailers leading into this movie, or I don't know, the Survivor promotions for this movie that were out there for some reason, it felt like it was like the aliens to A Quiet Place's Alien, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's kind of felt like the vibe they were going for, where, oh, look, there are more monsters. Because if you remember, A Quiet Place has one monster. And then a second one comes along, I'm pretty sure. But, like, the whole point is there's one, maybe two, roaming this giant area. And they can avoid it because of that. This one has so many of them. And it's like, okay, that how do they avoid that? How do you walk through all of Manhattan without breaking glass and attracting these things? There's no establishment of how loud you have to be in order to attract one of these things. How close they have to be to you to have it attract you. And that's where this movie fails. This is a day one. This should be almost a more scientific movie where people are observing and learning these rules. This should have been a massive ensemble film where you don't have a particular protagonist you're following. And like the original Alien, eventually you figure out who that protagonist is because they're the last one left standing and they figured out the rules to survival.
Yeah, I think too. Okay, so the rules, yes. The fact that it's so quickly, everybody's just quiet. That was nonsense. Didn't like that at all. My biggest takeaway from this movie is also, look at who is attached to this movie, right? You have Lupita Nyong'o. You have Joseph Quinn. You have Jaimin Hansu, who's barely in the movie. I don't know where he goes. You have Alex Wolff. You have a lot of really talented people who are giving it their all. The direction's not bad either, honestly. Like, Michael Sarnowski's directing is actually pretty solid. There's just no reason for this movie to exist. And when I sit there and I watch the first A Quiet Place, and we see it go, you know, it's great movie, makes sense, fun idea, whatever. Then you get into A Quiet Place too. Don't necessarily love what it builds up to as the ending, that last shot, because it's kind of like, wasn't this established already a little bit earlier on? But whatever, still makes sense why it was going. I have two big issues with this setup. Number one, we know that our protagonist is terminally ill.
Yeah.
We also know that our protagonist will not succeed in whatever our protagonist is trying to accomplish in this movie. Because getting pizza does not count. And that's fucking annoying. Okay. That's all I'm going to say about the getting pizza thing. It was annoying. The thing with this is we know that these monsters are going to exist for a long time on this planet. And we know that this character is terminally ill. So to me, to make this movie, ending it with her turning on the music and having a monster come so that it can rip her to shreds and kill her. Instead, maybe there should have been something that was established that she's able to obtain from these monsters that potentially cures cancer or something along those lines. Now, all of a sudden, there's a purpose to this movie. And when they inevitably make A Quiet Place 3 and now they're destroying all the monsters, Lupita Nyong'o's character comes back in A Quiet Place 3. And she starts to establish, no, we can't kill them all because the cure for cancer is within them. I'm still alive because of this. Now there's a purpose to A Quiet Place Day One. Instead, I watch monsters attack in a very generic way that we've seen a million times throughout the history of film. The monsters come, the monsters attack. Our character doesn't really get a hero moment throughout the movie. She meets up with a couple other people throughout. It goes along very normally. The tension dies off. They're quiet. They do a silly little stage dance at the jazz bar. They leave. He escapes. He gets on the boat. And she purposefully has herself killed. Also, water doesn't make ink run. That's good to know. Once you get to the point of an alien invasion, you could write on a piece of paper. You could jump into the Hudson River. Get onto a boat, unfold the paper, it will be nice and crisp, and you will be able to read the entire note, no problem, because alien invasions prevent ink from running on paper. Facts only. I just explained the entire hour and 40-minute movie, and why did I have to watch that? Why didn't they come up with a bigger purpose? If that cancer thing is in there, you have a movie that you say, oh shit, this is actually going somewhere right now. But to me right now, I actually am genuinely asking this for the people who are watching, for anybody who's listening, if you want to leave in the comments, I'm genuinely asking this. If you liked this movie, what was it about it that drew you in? Mm-hmm. Because it doesn't have the same tone as the first two movies. It's not the same style as the first two movies. And the characters don't feel like, I don't know why these were the characters chosen. Are these characters important in the future of A Quiet Place? Neither one of them show up in A Quiet Place or A Quiet Place 2. Where's Cillian Murphy? Why doesn't he show up in this movie? Why can't they find somebody like that? So that's what my biggest complaint is right here, aside from the fact that ink won't run in water once there's an alien invasion.
Yeah, it just honestly just feels pointless. It doesn't feel necessary, and it feels like a cash grab at this point. And it's one of those big complaints we have about Hollywood in general. And I think this has been one of our big complaints about films in 2024 in general. And it's part of the reason why we haven't been talking about new films for a long time, is because trying to find new films to watch, like, there just haven't been that many good ones. It's been a really disappointing year, and we're not even at the
point. It's because we're coming off of the writer's strike, though. That's what's happening.
Yeah, but are we even at the point where we're seeing the fullest extent of that at this point, though?
Yes, because I think we're also at the point where we're not far enough removed that you could have rushed out a movie by now.
Right.
You have to think, like, by the end of this year, now you have the writing where you can start to rush out movies from really good writers with really good actors. They're not going to be maybe as crisp as they were. But I also think it's why you see Yorgos Lanthimos making two movies in the same year. It's because there was a huge delay. And now he's got this stuff that he's trying to put together to get out. And I
think there's two more coming out next year.
Well, I mean, maybe he's just a crazy person. I don't know. But I do feel like there's something to that. And I will almost guarantee you, I mean, if you look at who wrote this, it's John Krasinski and Michael Cernowski. So the director and then the guy who directed the original. And I do think that the two of them probably wrote this, had the writer's strike, because I think there were two other writers attached to it. I think the writers who did A Quiet Place 2 were attached to this movie and then were kicked off of the movie, probably because of the writer's strike. And maybe, I don't know if John Krasinski and Michael Cernowski are in the WGA, but maybe they're able to keep writing because they're not actually going against what their guild is telling them. So they write the movie, they put this movie out, and they make a movie that just doesn't have a good script. And, you know, there's just, there's nothing to it. We already know what the monsters look like. We already know what the monsters can do. So when you're not, there's nothing unique that happens. And I'm sorry that this for 43 minutes, we've bitched and complained. I hope it's at least fun to listen to us complain in some way, shape or form, but this movie just doesn't hit on any of the levels it's supposed to hit.
Yeah. And it doesn't add anything new. And I think, like, you kind of mentioned that with the cancer thing, but it doesn't even add anything new as to, cause like, I found myself asking a lot of questions while watching this movie of like, there's a lot of like ambient noise in New York. And obviously a lot of it's destroyed by the time we get there. But then they have the rain scene. Mm-hmm. And my thought process at that point is, where are these monsters at this point? Are they like, is it so loud that they're like cowering somewhere? Are they hiding somewhere away from the sound? Are they like going frantic because everything's making sound? Like, how are they responding to it? And I wanted to see what the aliens were doing. I didn't care about the people because they didn't have character establishment. And I think one of the biggest missed moments in this entire movie, which maybe it was an intentional fake out, but when they're in Sam's apartment and she screams, right? She does her scream. And then Joseph Quinn's Eric does his scream too. And that entire scene leading up, Eric is standing in front of this massive window with a clear fire escape on it. And I'm just waiting for this alien to show up there.
Yeah.
And it never happens. And like, that's good in a movie where there's tension set up the entire time, but there's no tension. There's no tension in this scene because it's clear that nothing's going to happen because our characters are talking at a normal voice.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I was disappointed. I mean, I assume that they would just build off of whatever had happened in the other two and, you know, find a way to like make it something. But you said cash grab earlier, and it really is. That's what this felt like to me. This just felt like a cash grab. It wasn't doing anything to try to progress the story. It wasn't trying to do anything original. There's no big twist. There's nothing really exciting. It just felt like a cash grab. It really did. And if you put good actors in a movie sometimes, that'll work. Yeah. But I think that, you know, this movie is a box office success. Sure. Yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people are going to see this movie.
It was a $67 million budget. Domestically, it's already made $93.9 million, and worldwide, it's made $177 million. So yeah, it's already a box office success. It's only been in theaters for 10 days. Mm-hmm. Good for that. I also think, though, that part of the reason why it's had that success is because they're just, like you said, there really wasn't much going up against it. Inside Out 2 obviously has decimated the box office, like destroyed it, yes, killed everything in its path, made $1.2 billion worldwide, $534 million in 2024. Like, it's absolutely killing it. And good for Inside Out 2. I'm happy for it. Like, I am. Good for them for figuring that out. But when you look at the other movies that are out in theaters right now, there's nothing there.
Well, they're, I mean, other than Kinds of Kindness, which, let me tell you, a divisive film.
Yeah, and also divisive film, also not a huge box office draw. Yorgos is never a huge box office draw.
It's also 3 hours long, which turns people off too.
I didn't realize it was that long. Yeah, and then you have Despicable Me 4, which just came out. Bad Boys Ride or Die already had its audience who was dying to see it go see it. And then you have Maxine, which is going to get what it's going to get. Mm-hmm. I do think that it's been a slow summer with the exception, yeah, of Inside Out 2. The second highest grossing movie this year is Dune Part 2 at $282 million.
That's wild.
$282 million is the second highest domestic grossing movie. It made $711 worldwide. I don't know what 2023 looks like, but I'm going to pull it up because I'm curious. 2023, you had 7 movies, all with higher domestic grosses than the second highest grossing movie in 2024. And most of those movies were out by now. Mm-hmm. So it's not like it's going to get better for the box office moving forward. It's only going to get worse. And I mean, yeah, this movie's going to be a success, but it's going to top out at like 120, 150. Like, it's not going over 150. It made $52 million its opening weekend. You normally go 2.5. You're looking at $125 million. I mean, good. It's not great.
Yeah. I mean, the box office is also being weird right now because, I mean, people are already buying tickets to Deadpool and Wolverine.
Yeah.
That movie's already on track to be the highest grossing R-rated movie of all time. And we just had that last year.
Well, yeah, it shows you that that record is just going to keep getting broken and broken and broken.
Yeah.
That, for sure.
Absolutely. But and this is the thing. But we also haven't had big blockbusters yet. And, I mean, we have Twisters coming out in a couple of weeks. I don't know how people are going to respond to that movie. It'll be really interesting to see. It's going to be an interesting movie to watch. I don't know if it's going to be good. But, like, this is the weird thing with just where Hollywood's at right now. And it's not helped by the fact that we are seeing these effects from the strikes from last year. And, yeah, like, it's probably only going to get a little – it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Yeah. And this is going to be the lowest grossing – A Quiet Place movie. It's going to be the lowest grossing, yeah, in the franchise. And it's both domestically and internationally. And it had the biggest budget out of all three. Mm-hmm. So, you know, yeah, did it do well? It did better probably than I expected. Yeah. But, you know, maybe it does have to do with the timing. And I don't think that this one gets the legs. If anything, because I think they'll do a sequel to the second. I think they'll finish, yeah, out like whatever that trilogy, yeah, is. This movie probably prevents more people from seeing the third one than gets, mm-hmm, them to go see the third one. Because you can sit there and you can look on Rotten Tomatoes and see 87%. You can see a 73%, fan score. You can look at that. That's fine. Like that. And you know what? I could be in the minority here. Mm-hmm. But when I go over here and I look at the Letterboxd rating of this movie, the Letterboxd rating of this movie is 3.3. That's not 73% of people liking a movie. So whoever's over, it's kind of like how the Acolyte, the Star Wars series, has, like, they've literally taken off the audience score because it was down to like 14% because people were just review bombing it. Mm-hmm. That is what it feels like A Quiet Place defenders are doing over on Rotten Tomatoes right now.
It's part of the reason why Rotten Tomatoes just isn't accurate depiction it's of bad now. Audience
it really response is. Anymore. It used to be so useful. It's so bad now. I don't even really look at it. Like, it just comes up when you type the movie in. That's the first thing you see.
I think one of the biggest things with A Quiet Place Day One, you mentioned, like, you mentioned Cernowski's direction. It is gorgeous. Like, he captured some great shots. The biggest problem with it is it didn't feel like it was anything new, which is unfortunate because there's definitely a lot of artistry in what he's doing. But every time I saw this shot of this desolate New York, I'm like, there are movies that have done this already.
Yeah.
I'm not seeing anything new. Whereas a quiet, like the first Quiet Place, John Krasinski's direction in that movie is fantastic. And it's rural and it's different. This is just like, hey, here's a large city and it's the large city. Phil, how many movies have we personally talked about on the podcast, like between this and Patreon, that have had monsters rampaging through New York? This is at least the third.
Yeah. Because we did Cloverfield and we did Godzilla.
Yeah. So, like, it's you need to do something special if you are doing this post-apocalyptic New York. You have to make it look different somehow. You have to give us some sort of look at it. And I think this movie would have been more compelling if there was more sound, which is a weird thing to say in a Quiet Place movie, but we just really needed that investigation from the characters of these aliens, because that's what's going to happen. People, even the smartest humans, are going to be observing the behavior of these creatures as soon as they emerge.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they are the most violent and invasive species we have ever seen, people are going to be observing them to figure out how to survive against them.
Mm-hmm.
And that is unfortunately what we're robbed of in this movie, and what could have really pushed it over the top to be an incredibly successful science fiction movie.
I agree. All right. I agree. Everybody wants to hear us talk about something good. Tomorrow we're putting out Do the Right Thing for our Patreon. I know we have patrons on here who are listening, who will listen to this in the morning and stuff like that. I know we just bitch for 52 minutes, but Do the Right Thing, we're going to be very positive on. So if you want to listen to us talk about the way protest movies should be made and the way every movie that's followed it has pretty much failed, come listen to us do the Right Thing, because, man, Spike Lee had so much promise. He really did. And I don't think he's had some good movies, but he just has not lived up to the hype that Do the Right Thing laid out for him. Thanks for listening to this. You know, next week we'll be doing Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 and Long Legs, and I am excited.
I think next week we should be more positive.
I don't think
there's a high chance we'll be a lot more positive next week.
Yeah, I'm really excited for Long
Legs so much.
Yeah, I'm really excited for Long Legs. I like the Guardians of the Galaxy movies. Like, I think we're going to be good next week. Hopefully. We always knew this was going to be a struggle, everybody. We always knew this was going to be a struggle coming back to Phase 5. That's when we took a 5-month break. So thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed it as much as you could. Like the video, subscribe to the channel. Tell me what you liked about Quiet Place Day 1. I'm not being sarcastic. I really genuinely want to know what it is that drew you to this and what made you like it. So that's it. That's what we got. We're going to go record Do the Right Thing. See you later.